This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for March 6, 2015. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzalo of Global Commodity Analytics in Atchison, Kansas. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with Ben Pruse of the Andersons in Everly, Iowa. In agricultural news, a new FDA study shows little contamination in the U.S. milk supply. We'll have that in other stories. Also, Todd Gleason looks at the hog market with Purdue ag economist Chris Hurt, and meteorologist Ed Kieser will have the latest on South American harvest conditions. It's all on the Friday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.
Let's see how futures finished up this week. Hard red winter March wheat settled at 520 3/4, up 6 3/4. May, 522 1/4, up 6, and make that 5 1/4. Soft March wheat settling at 485 3/4, up 4 1/2. The May, 482 1/2, up 2. March corn settled 379 1/4, down 3 1/2. May, 386, down 4 1/2. July, 394, down 4 1/4. December, 410 3/4, down 3 1/4. March beans settling 979 1/4, unchanged on the day. May, 985 down 1/2. July, 990 1/2 down 1/2. November, 965 1/4, down 3/4. March soybean meal, 337 up to 60. March soybean oil, 3114 down 29 cents. Last trades over on the livestock side, April live cattle, 155.02 1/2, up 175. June, 147.32 1/2, up 130. March feeders, 209.90, up 3.32 1/2. April lean hogs, 66.17. They're down 65. The May, 77.27 1/2, down 17 1/2. And those are last trades and settlements. It's Friday afternoon from the Chicago Board of Trade. Looking at meteorologist Drew Leonard's weather highlights, he says U.S. Midwest weather is expected to be warmer over the coming week with a restricted amount of precipitation. A drier bias in the lower Midwest will be welcome after recent heavy rain and snowfall. But wet soil conditions and cool soil temperatures may leave a part of the southeastern U.S. and Delta with less than ideal conditions for spring planting. Rain will return to a part of the region early next week and again late next week into the following weekend. Meanwhile, U.S. hard red winter wheat country will be left drier over the next full week to 10 days. Precipitation will be minimal and temperatures will trend a little warmer than usual. Looking down into South America, Brazil rainfall will concentrate on center-south and center-west crop areas over the next week. Some locally heavy rain is possible, but most of the precipitation will be variable enough from one day to the next to avoid serious flooding. Temperatures will be seasonable. Central and northern Argentina is still expected to dry down over the next 2 weeks. The ground is saturated in most of the key grain and oilseed production areas, raising some concern over crop quality. The drier bias will improve crop and field conditions, except in southern Argentina, where some increase in rainfall may evolve to benefit areas that have been drying out recently. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at the futures market is Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics. He is in Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon, Mike. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Dave. Come in.
Well, it is Friday afternoon, after all, and as we look at the marketplace, really a whole lot of luff and nothing happened today.
You know, one of the things that is probably noteworthy, and this is in the outside markets, Dave, is not just have we seen this surge in the dollar take place that we've gotten used to, and with that we've gotten used to the bond markets staying relatively strong and the stock markets making new all-time highs. This trading day today, and one day doesn't make a trend, but it's worth noting that we've got a substantial sell-off in the equities markets, in the bond markets, with bond yields starting to eclipse some major support levels. And in fact, the S&P 500's taken out one of its major support levels that it's been able to hold for a couple months now. And I think this might be the beginning of the punch bowl being taken away, i.e. a Federal Reserve interest rate hike coming, and the equities markets are saying, hey, maybe this is the end of the good times for the deflationary trade and the financial market trade. And so this is worth noting because of the asset allocation issue. And so if we start to see the equities get beat up even more and we start to see even longer-term moving averages violated, then we might be able to get ready for some asset reallocation, i.e. back into the commodity sector as we go down the road here. So that mid-year turn in the markets with some of the wedge formations and now what we're seeing today could continue to develop here, and that's worth keeping an eye on.
Is it possible that we saw some new shorts enter the grain market today?
I doubt it. I think that probably what we saw was a reaction to some El Nino updates by the National Weather Service, and we also saw some reaction by new major lows in the euro currency early on. But when that market could not be pressed in both the soybeans, the meal, and then including the wheat, I think you probably mostly saw short covering today. And I think you probably also saw a trade that had gotten the wheat-corn spread down to a dollar, and that wheat-corn spread wanted to reverse, and some spread traders probably wanted to take some money home as they went into the weekend. And so we actually saw a lift in the wheat price at the expense of the corn. But I wouldn't think that we had any really new shorts jump into this market at this stage of the game. I would suspect that happened back on Tuesday when the dollar tried to give a sell signal but failed, and it actually broke higher out of a pennant formation. That probably brought new shorts in as far as the grain markets are concerned.
If you want to be a wheat bull, and I don't know, there's all three of them left in the United States now, are you encouraged or discouraged by the week's trade?
I am encouraged that the 480 low held. I am encouraged that the supply side, i.e. the hard red wheat conditions, did not improve in the state of Kansas. They actually went down versus the last month in the monthly update by ERS. I'm also encouraged that we saw the drought monitor not get any better versus last week. It didn't lose any ground in the southern plains, but it didn't get any better. And as you said on the weather update just a few minutes ago, the next 10 days look pretty dry, and we're going to be 70 degrees here in eastern Kansas, far eastern Kansas, still in corn and bean country. We're going to be 70 degrees a week from today. The western Kansas area may be in the mid to upper 70s. So we will break dormancy, it looks like to me, Dave, and with a very dry pattern. And we're under crunch time now. Once we break dormancy, we really want to get some rains out here.
Did anything in the market this week want you to put on additional hedges?
Yeah, I mean, we had to obey the technicals, in my opinion, on the soybeans. And so when we lost the 40-day moving average and the 20-week moving average, I felt like it was fairly easy technically to add a 10 to 15% increment in soybeans, getting the brokerage clients up to about 65% hedged. The other thing I've talked to a lot of them about, especially this week, was selling such a low price, because you go over into Ohio and you're looking at prices that are down to $9 because there's about a 55-cent basis on new crop fall beans. So you don't want to sell a low here. And I think the technicals, again, with the way that we tested that 10.05 level in November beans and held it when we tested it three or four different times last week and early this week, that's your line in the sand for a hedger, if you ask me. And you don't need to have a lot of hedges on if you cross back through that.
We're quickly going down the tracks to a WASDE report next week, and then at the end of the month we have a planting intentions report. We have a quarterly grain stock report. Is it possible, when it's all said and done, that the trade will be wrong and we will actually put more corn and less soybeans in the ground?
I think that's unlikely in the beans. I won't say that about the corn, but in the beans, that 83.5 number is super low when you look at the CRP and you look at last year's acres, and you just look at the 5-7 year history. And when you have an end of February that has a bean corn new crop ratio at 2.4 or higher, you tend to draw down the corn acres and put them into beans since 2007 at least. And so I think your bean number is likely to go higher. Corn, I could give either way on that based upon the February price action.
Does corn in many of the areas that you work with farmers pencil out better than beans at this point?
I think it doesn't do any worse at this point because of the drop in the bean price. But as we were 2 weeks ago, Dave, it looked like the beans were a lot better when it came to penciling out, on especially on marginal ground. It seemed like if you could not get over a 150 or 160 corn yield, the soybeans really worked a lot better. So I think that's kind of where I'm at, is the marginal ground, the questionable ground, that's where you're going to see more soybeans. And this brings into the point, next week could be our first weather week after the supply-demand report, because the Delta is already being talked about. Problems with getting early planting done because of the wet weather they had this past week, cold weather, and also additional rains expected. It'll be interesting to see what Ed says here at the bottom of the hour.
We can't let you go without talking about livestock, particularly feeder cattle. Oh, my.
A really nice turn. I think the cash market has finally caught. I was just talking to a client here in eastern Kansas about some of his sales he did in St. Joe just yesterday, and he was selling heavy six-weight feeders at about $245, $243 a pound. And, you know, you're getting to the point where five-weights are running almost $3 again. So I think the guys in the springtime are getting real eager to get some feeder cattle for the pasture and for the grass, and you're starting to see the futures market react to that, and the funds come back in. So that 190, 195 low in the front-end futures of feeders, probably a hard low until we get to the later part of this year.
Yeah, and there is still quite a discount. Meanwhile, do you think lean hogs have found their bottom?
I do, Dave, because I think the supply side has been overplayed to the downside, and I think the demand side is going to finally come around, especially with the Easter seasonal coming around, and also the featuring seems to be getting a little bit better week to week on the pork side. So pork exports were a marketing year high. That was really nice to see as well.
Before we let you go, also a comment or two about macroeconomics, especially as we look ahead to next week.
Well, next week will be the week that we find out more about what China's big annual meeting brings and what they're going to release publicly, because they're having that right now and have had it most of this week. I think what the trade is expecting is 7% growth out of China and more monetary stimulus. And so I think that's where, if you want, like I said this morning, if you want the dollar to go higher now, I think you're going to have to feed the bull in the dollar. And you would look at China or the euro area to have to do that. So I'll be watching China real closely next week for whatever they let out as far as public information from this recent meeting.
Thanks, Mike, and we'll see
you
Tuesday.
Look forward to seeing you Tuesday, sir.
Yes, sir. Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics, and he is in Atchison, Kansas. A quick announcement regarding next Tuesday's all-day Ag Outlook meeting. Some of you may have not gotten your tickets in the mail yet. Do not fret. If you've purchased your tickets and they haven't gotten to your home by Tuesday, we'll have a check-in list and tickets held for you at the door as well. If you've already gotten your tickets, bring them along to the meeting, and we look forward to seeing you there.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
In agricultural news, a new Food and Drug Administration study shows little evidence of drug contamination in milk after surveying almost 2,000 dairy farms. The agency in 2012 took samples of raw milk from the farms and tested them for 31 drugs, almost all of them antibiotics. Results released by the agency yesterday show that less than 1% of the total samples showed illegal drug residue. FDA said 11 of the samples from the group with previous violations showed illegal levels of drug residue, and 4 from the control group showed illegal residue. The study was blind, so no violations will be reported. The U.S. Trade Representative for WTO Multilateral Affairs suggests it likely will be the next WTO ministerial meeting conference in Kenya in December before the WTO's new trade facilitation agreement takes effect. Mark Linscott says that it may take that long because each country has its own domestic ratification process, and some countries, such as Japan, will require legislative approval. Linscott says a December goal is consistent with the history of previous WTO agreements. The agreement, which seeks to iron out some of the differences in customs regulations and other paperwork barriers to trade, will enter into force only after it has been ratified by 2/3 of WTO members, or 107 of the current 160 members. To date, only 3 countries, Hong Kong, Singapore, and the United States, have formally ratified the TFA. Thousands of butchers are approaching retirement age across the country, but few people want to go into the business. Meat-cutting businesses have been sprinkled across the country for generations. In 1990, there were 1,200 federally inspected livestock slaughterhouses in the U.S., but by 2010, the number had dropped to 800. State-licensed operations have also declined. For example, in Iowa, there are now 140 or fewer small meat processors compared to about 450 in the 1960s. Lauren Gwynn, a professor at Oregon State University, says the demand for specialty meat is prompting some new businesses to open, but that getting started is costly and difficult. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
A year ago in March, the new PED virus was the talk of the trade. Baby pig death losses of a nearly 100% were the reality of some herds. The disease was not well understood, and it was spreading rapidly. There was trade talk, says a Purdue University ag economist, that death losses were so high it could account for 20% of the 2014 pork production. It was a fearful and unguided time, says Chris Hurt.
Unfortunately, in the early stages, the pork industry had no way of measuring the national baby pig death losses. Fear set in among some pork buyers. What if bacon was not available to put on fast food hamburgers? Hog and pork prices exploded to record highs, with the national live price reaching $100 per hundredweight.
Contrast that number with the 5-year lows near $45 per live hundredweight hogs brought this winter. It's a price bust from the record highs a year earlier.
The market adage, buy the rumor and sell the fact, certainly has played out once again. The inability to refute the rumors of massive death losses a year ago contributed to price overshooting to the upside. Now the reality that pork production was only down 2% in 2004 and is now moving up rapidly in 2015 helped create what may be the greatest collapse of hog prices ever, a classic boom-bust price cycle.
Now Chris Hurt says the market is deciding if the prices overshot to the downside. Will they recover, or will large pork supplies justify the price break? February pork supplies were expected to be up about 3%, while actual supplies have been up 7% due to 4% more hogs reaching the market than anticipated. The USDA's inventory count in December appears to have undercounted the number of young pigs. Pork producers, it seems, may have also expanded sow numbers and farrowing intentions more than USDA picked up in the December survey. Based on that report, pork supplies in the last half of 2015 were expected to be up 6 to 7%. If expansion has been more robust, this could mean 8 to 10% more pork in the last half of the year and a continuation of weaker prices. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Ben Pruse of the Andersons in Everly, Iowa. Good afternoon, Ben.
Afternoon, Dave.
I suspect producers are really looking forward to next week when the temperature finally warms up.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Next Thursday, they're calling for 60 degrees here in northwest Iowa.
But I also imagine that there has been some movement of grain because of advanced delivery.
We've alluded to several times before, there's a little bit of moisture concerns in the bin. We aren't quite seeing the movement that we thought we would see yet. Granted, the weather isn't here either, but we feel like here in the next 30 days, we really see that corn movement in one degree or another start to pick up.
Talk a little bit about these moisture concerns.
Guys, honestly, last year, just things were tight when corn was $3 cash and wanted to save a little bit of drying costs, so they gambled on some higher, some semi-wet corn, 17 to 19%. They just put it right in the bin versus bringing it to town and drying it out. And, the corn didn't really kind of rally like they expected it to, so here we have kind of a soggy price and literally a little bit soggy corn, so they're kind of got their hands full here.
How much old crop corn is out in the hands of producers at this point versus a typical year?
Oh, sure. Typically at this point, guys are about 50% sold. And here today, I mean, they're probably maybe 30. They've got about 70% old crop corn stocks left. And they're kind of frozen, kind of waiting for this March 31st crop report, kind of once we get planting. They're doing the wrong thing, in my opinion, is they're not managing their risk that's in front of them. They're just waiting and seeing what happens, and I really am not in that camp today.
I'll turn your attention to the new crop. Are any producers selling soybeans?
Soybeans, yes. Not in the vast sums that we would like to see just to protect ourselves, but, here in Northwest Iowa at the Andersons, we continue to encourage guys to at least ride a hedge to arrive. Lock in, protect some bushels, knowing that if you need to, you can put a call feature onto that to participate if the market would go higher, but if it doesn't, you're protected. And we think that is the prudent thing to do here today.
What about corn at 4.25?
We're the same boat, 15 and 16. If you do it in the options account, have a straddler, have just ride a hedge to arrive. We offer what we call min-max contracts. Protect some bushels. Know how you can participate in the upside, but protecting your crop on a certain percentage seems to be the prudent thing to do here today.
Very quickly, your prices.
Yeah, we are 364 cash corn, 939 cash beans.
Thank you very much, Ben.
Thanks.
That's Ben Pruse of the Andersons in Everly, Iowa. And in 2 minutes, we'll be back with a look at South American weather with meteorologist Ed Kieser. It's National Chocolate Cheesecake Day. The first mention of cheesecake in history was during the ancient Olympic Games. Cato the Elder, who was born in 234 BC, wrote of cheesecake preparation in his farming manual, De Agricultura. It's the oldest surviving work of Latin prose, which looked at up-to-date agricultural practices. American-style cheesecakes relying on cream cheese was invented in 1872. This new high-fat cheese was developed for the Empire Cheese Company and later became known as Philadelphia brand cream cheese, which is now widely used in the creation of cheesecakes. It's also National Frozen Food Day. It was Clarence Birdseye who invented and commercialized a method for quick freezing food products. In 1923, Birdseye used a $7 electric fan, buckets of brine, and cakes of ice for packing fresh food into waxed cardboard boxes and flash freezing them under high pressure. In 1930, retail frozen foods went on sale for the first time in Springfield, Massachusetts. Various fruits, vegetables, meat, and fish were offered for sale. On this day in agricultural history in 1899, aspirin was patented by Felix Hoffmann of the German company Bayer. Aspirin was first sold as a powder. The first tablets were produced in 1915. And in 1912 on this date, Nabisco debuted the Oreo cookie. Originally, the Oreo was mound-shaped and came in two flavors, lemon meringue or cream. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at South American agricultural weather is meteorologist Ed Kieser.
I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser with a look at the weather for corn and soybean production in South America. It's now March, and for Argentina and South Brazil, that means the growing season has reached the equivalent of Labor Day in our part of the world. Corn and beans are reaching maturity, and soon the focus will be on harvesting. In Argentina, more rain fell in waterlogged San Luis, Cordoba, and northern Santa Fe last weekend and early this week, resulting in a continuation of flooding in some fields. Improvement is now underway. The last few days have been dry, and mostly dry weather is in the forecast for Argentina for the coming week. While some western and northern production areas have been wet of late, and some southern areas have been dry, the overall outlook for Argentina is for a big crop. Helping that has been average to seasonably cool temperatures in recent weeks as crops have been filling. In South Brazil and neighboring Paraguay, a few rounds of thunderstorms in the past week have fields moist, slowing early harvesting but benefiting filling crops. In the coming week, the weather looks favorable for crop development and field work as only scattered showers and thunderstorms will dot the area from time to time. Farther north in Brazil, the season is longer, so double cropping is common. The weather has been less than ideal in recent weeks for first crop harvesting and second crop corn planting. Rain has especially hampered field work from Paraná into Mato Grosso do Sul and Mato Grosso. Those areas need a prolonged period of dry weather, and that is not in the forecast. In Mato Grosso, the largest double crop state, planting of second season corn is only about two-thirds complete. Ideally, planting should already be finished. Any corn yet to be planted runs a significant risk of reaching the critical reproductive stage after the dry season starts, which is typically in late April. Finally, the annual WILL All-Day Ag Outlook is coming on Tuesday at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. On occasion over the years, the weather has made it interesting getting to this event. Fortunately, this will not be one of those years. On Tuesday morning, there might be frost on the windshield and sun glare for eastbound travelers just after sunrise. That's it. No ice, no snow, just lots of sunshine with the afternoon high temperature around 50 degrees. And for the morning sun glare, sunrise in Covington on Tuesday is 8:07 Eastern Daylight Saving Time, 7:07 Central Time for those coming from Illinois. That's your weather update for Commodity Week. I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser.
We still have a few tickets available for next Tuesday's All-Day Ag Outlook meeting at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. I'll make you a deal if you purchase yours on Monday morning at this phone number, 217-333-7300. That's Monday morning before noon Central Time. I will bring the tickets with me on Tuesday, and you can be part of the festivities. Ticket price is $25. Get your ticket on Monday morning at 217-333-7300. And that is today's Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.